Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Wednesday, May 29th. Today, we're sharing another excerpt from our post-legislative session event earlier this month at the University of Denver. On today's episode, political reporter Jesse Paul interviews State Senator Jim Smallwood, a Parker Republican, and State Senator Kyle Mulica, a Thornton Democrat, about the 2024 lawmaking term and their broader tenures at the Capitol. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun is partnering with multiple news outlets across the state to understand what is driving Coloradans this election year. What issues do you care about most as we head into the 2024 election? Let us know by filling out our survey at coloradosun.com/votervoices. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1998, near Cortez, Colorado, Officer Dale Claxton was murdered by gunfire from a stolen water tank truck he had pulled over. This event triggered the largest manhunt in the West, spanning across the Four Corners region. The three men responsible had stolen the truck from a nearby construction site. After the attack, they fled into the desert, pursued by a massive force of local, state, and federal officers. This pursuit led to further shootouts, injuries, and a significant deployment, including the Colorado National Guard. The manhunt concluded over the years as the fugitives' bodies were gradually discovered. Officer Claxton's legacy continues, commemorated at various local landmarks. Before we continue, join the Colorado Sun on June 25th as equity reporter Tatiana Flowers speaks with a panel about how they see mental illness falling through the cracks, what some solutions are or ways to address the issues, and more. The event is free and virtual. RSVP today at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
All right, well, let's go right into it. At the end of the session, I was looking around the room, and I realized that there were going to be no more Democrats that had served in the minority and no more Republicans except for Larry Liston, but he's kind of an asterisk, that had served in the majority in the Senate. And that's a big change. When I first started covering the legislature, things had flipped. The Senate was in Republican control, and that only lasted for, I guess, the first 2 years of your term, Senator Smallwood. And I guess the question is for you, you know, you're not going to be, your term limited, you're not going to be back in January. God bless you, praise the Lord, right? But, you know, what do you think the effect of that is going to be on the legislature? You know, not having that kind of institutional knowledge and background of kind of the tables being turned. And I think you might, is your mic on?
Shouldn't surprise anybody that Jesse did not give me a microphone that works. So. No, thank you everybody for having me. It's a great question. There's a certain humbleness, I think, that you get when you've been in the majority and then lost the majority and you've experienced actually needing to govern, which is what you need to do in the majority. And then, you know, there's so many people that have only served in the minority where basically your job is just defense all the time, right? They just fight. They don't really have to worry about making good policy. They don't have to worry about governing because nothing that you do in the minority from an offensive perspective really matters, right? There's no bills that can be passed in a partisan way when you're in the minority. So I will say that piece is humbling, as well as kind of from more 30,000 foot. Like when I got elected back in 2016, I was one of those very pro term limit types of guys, right? Like, you know, you should only be in office for 4 years and then get out of there because you're wasting time and taxpayer money. And now that I've been there for 8 years, I'm like, wow, that was really, really juvenile to be thinking, because it takes like 4 years to figure out where the bathrooms are and where the parking lots are and to start to just get your bearings. And then to have any influence at all takes like 5 or 6 years. And then to be sort of known as somebody who can actually help craft policy and get some, I don't want to say respect, that's probably not the right word, but at least some clout maybe, and people take you seriously. I don't think happened for me. First of all, it probably didn't happen for me if we ask Senator Mulica. But if it were to have happened for me, it probably was only my last year or two there. And then, you know, you gain all that institutional knowledge and then they boot you out. And the problem with that big picture is that what happens is as everybody leaves after 4, 6, 8 years, the only people in the building, I don't care if you're talking about DC or the Colorado State Capitol, the only people that have the institutional knowledge is the lobby. The lobbyists are the ones that have all the knowledge
journalists.
And therefore have all the power. So it's, yeah. It's
and the journalists, you don't give us enough credit. Yeah. No, it is a really interesting conversation because people think of term limits and they don't think of the like who has the institutional knowledge in the building. It's a nonpartisan staff. Senator Mollica, so I think you have a reputation of maybe helping bring your party down to earth on some issues, right? And so from your perspective, right, you're now going to be in a legislature where there are no Democrats, remember, being in the minority who you know maybe tailored their political beliefs or their votes to kind of, you know, recognize that things can switch at some point. So I wonder how, you know, you're viewing kind of the next few years. You're losing Fenberg, you're losing Fields, you're losing Jinal. What do you think things are going to look like?
Yeah, thank you. We're losing a lot of institutional knowledge and a lot of legislators who are really good at this job. And one sitting to my right now, I'm serving on Health Committee with Senator Smallwood, even though we're opposite parties, he is an extremely intelligent individual and he knows the issues. And I think that it makes me a little nervous that we're losing some of that knowledge. But I think, you know, my mindset has always been down there and it feels really simplistic, but it kind of doesn't happen a lot, is to treat others the way you would want to be treated. I often try to put myself in those shoes or in the minority shoes of how would I want to be treated if I was in the minority? You know, would I want people to come talk to me? Would I want people to try to give me an opportunity to represent my district and maybe have some influence so that I can go home and talk about some things that I've done for my district? And I think that goes a long way. It doesn't mean we always agree and we shouldn't agree. But I think that when you have that mindset, it does help out with relationship building down there. And, and I was talking to a constituent of mine the other day, and the reason I go down there with that mindset is because that's what my constituents told me to do when I was knocking on the doors. They said, we're tired of the hyper-partisanship. We want you to get things done, and we want you to work with people to get things done. And I think that when you look at politics, and I'm sure Senator Smallwood, I'm sure you can speak to this, that oftentimes it's a lot harder to stand up against your own party than it is even the other party. It's actually easier when a Republican does something to stand up against that because they're the opposite party. But to stand up against your own party and say, hey, no, you're going too far here. This isn't really representative of my district. That takes some courage. And I think, you know, what I'm trying to get through to my side is that we have to continue having that big tent that has gotten us to where we are today. Because if we shrink that and if we kind of go into this cancel culture and saying, you know, it's either this way or the highway, I think that we really run the risk of losing a lot of good people that are trying to get involved. And I don't think that's representative of Colorado either. I think that when you go out and you get out of that silo of the Capitol or that echo chamber and you're talking to people in your communities and you're knocking on doors, you find out that the vast majority of people maybe are right on one issue and maybe left on another issue, but they're right in the middle and they're not the extremes that oftentimes get a lot of press and politics. And that's what I try to represent. And it doesn't always make you the most popular person, especially amongst some of my colleagues. But I feel like that's what I was sent down there to do. And I have the privilege and the honor of representing a district I grew up in. And I think that I feel proud of that. And I hope that we start getting more like that and start going down that path.
Let me stay with you, Senator Mollica. I wanted to ask kind of about Capitol culture. There was like a lot of, I think, anxiety heading into the session about what was going to happen. And most of it kind of stayed behind the scenes, but, you know, under the surface, there was a lot of frustrations with each other. I wonder, you know, you've been there for a few years now, how you're feeling about the culture at the Capitol, you know, if things are worse off than when you began, or how do you think things have progressed in your time there?
Yeah, I think that it's an interesting dynamic right now at the Capitol. So the House has a supermajority of Democrats. The Senate is one seat away from being a supermajority. And then we have the governor, who's also a Democrat. And so, just complete control, And to me, that comes a great responsibility. And a big piece of that responsibility is to not abuse that or to not go too far. And I think that, you know, there's probably a a disagreement sometimes amongst Democrats of, you know, if maybe a mandate was issued and the voters have issued that mandate to kind of, you know, do as much as you can and go kind of to your corner as much as you can. I tend to disagree there. I think that the political environment that Colorado's in isn't purely just because Democrats are good and we govern in a better way. I think the ecosystem is a little messed up because of national politics, and we've seen that, and I think that it's very apparent that Colorado is middle of the road, and that you know, certain former presidents aren't all that popular here, and I think that there's been a number of things that have shifted that ecosystem, and I don't think that shift is permanent. And so so my goal is to say, okay, you know, we are in control, and we have that power, but how do we still govern appropriately? How do we still make sure that people feel like they're being heard, even sometimes when they may disagree with you? I think that when you're able to have that conversation and you're able to say, you know, what are your thoughts, that even at the end of that conversation, if you disagree, the animosity isn't as high. And you're able to walk away from that at least feeling like you were heard, and then oftentimes walk away from that finding that compromise and finding that middle ground. And I think that's something, and that's just something I think in human nature that, you know, when you're, you know, when we have the power that we do, that's something that internally, you know, my side of the aisle is working through, and I'm not the only one that kind of, I think, has that mindset. I think that there are others, I think that it's just going to continuously, you know, we just have to continuously focus on that and make sure that we're still governing appropriately.
How about you, Senator Smallwood? Is the Capitol a better or worse place to work 8 years after you started?
So I've given it much thought. Honestly, I mean, I've never found the Capitol to be an unpleasant place. And Senator Mollica knows this. Like, there aren't, after 8 years of being there, both in the majority and the minority, chairing committees and now being, you know, just a garden variety member of committees, like, generally, at least in the Senate, I've never served in the House. Senator Mollica served in the House first, which is a little more raucous and, you know, a lot more people and a lot more partisan and a lot more homogeneous for your own district, right? When your district is really, really small, you're not having to be to appeal to as broad of a demographic of voter. But I've always found the Senate to be a really, really civil place. There's only 35 people. You get to know each other personally. Right? Like, I think I see Senator Mollica's kids more than I see my own kids. You know, for example, I think you're sitting literally this close to people for 120 consecutive days. And yeah, you're talking policy, but you're also talking about your personal lives, what your kids are doing, what your families are doing, what your constituents are saying about a certain issue. And hey, you know, this is really bad for North Denver, or hey, this is really good for Weld County, right? And you hear people speak in a real passionate way about their districts, about their families, about their neighbors. You'd have to be pretty soulless, I think, to not absorb some of that and realize that, you know, there's 35 people that are there that really, I think, genuinely, other than one person, all want to do what's best for everybody in the state. And I say that a little tongue in cheek. We're really a lot more friendly than I think most people could ever imagine, right? It's extremely collegial. And so I found that when we were in the majority, and I learned great lessons there, as Senator Mollica said, about respect. Like, because when we were in the majority, the House was still run by Democrats. So there was nothing we could do in the majority unilaterally that would get us anywhere. If we did anything that even sniffed of partisanship, it would die in the House, right? So we even in the majority, you know, had to really take the other party into account. And so I found the experience to be generally quite sane. I made a couple of, I think, lifelong friendships, which I didn't think would happen when I got there. And yeah, I mean, there were some huge bumps along the way. anytime you get human beings together, there's a lot of imperfection there. But I've found the culture to be, again, wonderful. It was some of the best years of my life, for sure. So I don't really have any regrets on that side.
That's nice to hear.
The journalists, we haven't talked about the media yet. That's a whole thing.
I don't know what you're up to. I wish I had a Mayberry time at the Capitol. So we have kind of this is a special opportunity. Both of you are kind of experts in healthcare and health insurance. And Senator Mullica, you're an emergency room nurse, is your day job. You're also a University of Denver graduate, so I should point that out too. Go Colorado College. I want to start with you. You know, I wonder where you see the healthcare conversation going at the Capitol, and maybe where you would like to see the healthcare conversation going at the Capitol, because I know maybe there's some disconnect there. But you know, this year wasn't such a big healthcare year. Previous years have been, but I think that's going to come back up in the future.
Yeah, no, thank you. And to Professor Maskett, who you know, we were talking earlier, and I had taken a class when I was undergrad here, and so really excited to be back and showing my kids where mom and dad were, where our dorms were and everything. And so, I do. I agree. I think we did see more of a quiet year. And I think partially that's because, one, affordability and housing, and buying down the BS factor with education really was taking center stage. But I also think that what we were looking at is that we've made some huge changes. And I think that there was a consensus of, let's see what the impact of some of these laws that we've passed already are. I think that the next path that we have to go down now is workforce development. I think that when we're looking at healthcare and we are looking at making sure that we're providing adequate access and the healthcare that the people of Colorado deserve, we have to make sure that we're investing in our workers and the people who care for them. And I think we're starting to see that. We were able to pass a bill this year that created a new medical school up at the University of Northern Colorado, along with other investments for nursing programs at Metro State and down in the San Luis Valley, and then the vet school up at CSU. I also think that we're going to have to see a huge focus on what that burnout looks like for our healthcare workers and protecting our healthcare workers. We're starting to see violence in the workplace become a real issue, and we're starting to lose healthcare workers at a rapid rate. And so I think that that's kind of the next frontier, and I'm sure there's going to be other things, you know, from an insurance perspective and whatnot that'll be looked at. But in my opinion, I think a huge focus needs to be on our workforce and how do we not only attract new folks into the workforce, but how do we protect those who are already here? Because I think without them, we're not going to be able to get the care that we need. And so,
do you think maybe, you know, in recent years, the legislature has passed bills that offer specific, like, criminal protections, right, for election workers, public officials? Do you think that's coming for healthcare workers?
Yeah, so we have that in certain aspects in healthcare. So in the ER, it's an elevated offense if you assault a person that works in the ER. There's a strong push for a lot of criminal justice reform that is going on, and so I think that creating new penalties and new laws may not be palatable, and so I think those are going to be conversations that continue. But we're going to have to find a way to protect these healthcare workers. Obviously, coming out of the pandemic, that's extremely hard, and now still being understaffed from that, from a lot of folks leaving the profession or retiring, and then the violence piece, I think it's a perfect storm. And if we don't really address it, then I think we're going to be in a really bad situation. And so I think it's going to be something that we have to focus on as a state.
Nobody knows health insurance like you do. I mean, it's actually, some people might think it's boring, but when you stand up and talk about these health bills, it feels like, no offense, you're one of the only people that understand in the room, you know, kind of what's going on, and you explain to folks. Maybe talk about some of your disappointments in recent years. I know the Colorado option was something that you were pretty disappointed in, and how you're, you know, seeing that play out, and what you think the legislature needs to do to maybe rein that in, or, you know, reinsurance was there. It came up at the end of session. There was the Tabor issue. It's like a $34 million oopsie that had to come out of the budget. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's high praise, Jesse. Thank you. So it was $34 million a year times 2 years. So it's actually $60-some million in an error on that. So I've had a lot of frustrations on the health insurance and the healthcare side. It's And again, Sarah Mulica knows this, I'm sort of a one-trick pony in the Capitol. It is what I've spent 31 years dealing almost exclusively with population health management and the financing of health insurance, health plans for employers, you know, municipalities, not-for-profits, you name it. I mean, this stuff has gotten ridiculously expensive. And again, I saw it decades ago when I got interested in politics going, what are we doing? Like everything we're trying is not only not working, it's making the problem actually worse. I remember I wrote an article for a newspaper almost 20 years ago, and it was designed to be hyperbolic at the time, talking about, hey, if you're not careful, the cost of health insurance for a family is gonna exceed what families earn on average. And back then the number was like $30,000. Well, here we are in 2024, and the average cost of a family's annual insurance premium is $30,000. $30,000. You know, after the Affordable Care Act and all of this kind of stuff. So, you know, I saw it back then and was panicked enough about it then, and I looked to see what we've done in the state to help reverse that tide. And all we've done, by and large, is throw more gas on that fire. I appreciate Senator Mulica's comments about workforce and protecting not only the frontline workers, but to make sure that there are hospitals here when we need it, to make sure that there are doctors here when we need it, to make sure that when you call 911, an ambulance shows up, right? Like access to healthcare is something that in this country, we've gotten candidly kind of spoiled about. Unless you live in rural or frontier Colorado, here in the metro or in the Front Range, we're kind of spoiled. Like I can probably walk to two hospitals from my house in Parker, right? There's a lot of access. What we don't have is affordability. And so when the Affordable Care Act was passed, I always say they should have named it the Accessible Care Act, not the Affordable Care Act, because it did a lot for accessibility, but it did nothing for affordability. So when I see initiatives happen at the state level here and more mandates every year saying, we've got to cover more, we've got to cover infertility, because infertility is important. And I say, yes, infertility is important for people, but it's expensive. You know, IVF is $40,000, and if you need it twice, it's $80,000. So yes, it's important, but it's really, really expensive. And people aren't talking to me about accessibility as much as they are affordability nowadays, right? You can have the best health plan in the world out there, but if you can't afford it, it doesn't do you much good. So I don't know how many folks here even know or are interested, and I don't want to get into the esoteric here, but you know, when they passed the Colorado Option Plan a few years ago, that plan mandated that health insurance rates in our state are lowered by 5% every year. And what has happened is they've gone up every year to the tune of like 10% every year. So it's not only have they not gone down, they haven't even stayed flat, they haven't even stayed close to flat. So these are I mean, all kinds of ways to look at it. You could say they're strategic errors or blunders, or maybe they're just political moves. But the problem that I see now is that because we haven't done the little things right, now we're to the point where something like single payer is gaining more and more traction, because if you can't afford your health insurance, you might be the most staunch conservative on the planet. If you can't afford your own health insurance, at some point you're going to start clamoring for the government to take over and take control. And the problem with single payer, and I was a kid that grew up in Europe. My mom's German. She was naturalized after I was a baby, right? So I've lived the European healthcare system. It's affordable. It's not all that accessible. And a lot of Europeans, including my uncle who passed away a few years ago, would tell you that the quality is nothing like it is in the United States. So we've got this weird teeter-totter going on now where If we want all three legs of the three-legged stool, right? We want quality, we want accessibility, and we want affordability. And it's like every time we build two legs, we knock out the third, so then we add the third and knock out the first. And so, you know, if I'm ever coronated king, I'll have my own plans on how we handle healthcare and health insurance in our state, and it'll be probably the polar opposite of what we've seen today. Because I'm as worried about affordability and accessibility as anybody else, but what I'm terrified of is to have a small state like Colorado, right? We're 6 million people out of 360 million. We're a pretty small state. And to see us do something like move a single-payer initiative forward and have the healthcare professionals, the doctors and the nurses and the radiologists and the hospital system themselves saying, well, if you're going to mandate how much we can earn, we're not going to stay in Colorado. You know, it's a pretty short drive to Albuquerque or to Cheyenne or to Salt Lake City or to Wichita. I mean, we don't live in a vacuum here in Colorado. And to think that doctors and hospitals are going to stay here and be okay with their reimbursement rates being slashed in order to give people all three legs of that three-legged stool, I think we're kidding ourselves.
Can I ask you a quick, you can totally reject this, but one of the things that I've noticed at the Capitol, there's so much talk about housing affordability. They talk about property taxes. They talk about, you know, affordability measures when we talk about healthcare. No one talks about home insurance, right, which is rising really quickly. And are there any solutions that the legislature can do to tackle that? I mean, property taxes are going up, yes, so are people's home insurance rates, though, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, property insurance in general, I think it's probably not safe to lump it all together, because I think we have done some things. Like, we passed a really, I think, novel car insurance bill this year. I'm not sure if you saw that. That said, if you get a traffic infraction as opposed to getting points on your driving record and that being submitted to the car insurance company for them to raise your rates, you can instead choose voluntarily to do more driver's education. Going to be a drag, right? Nobody wants to go back to, I shouldn't say nobody. I don't want to go back to driver's ed. Some of you might want to, but if it means that my car insurance rates aren't going to go up by $60 a month, well, guess what? I'm happy to go back. So I think there's some kind of cool little novel things that we could do in some areas. The problem that we have in Colorado is really natural disasters. I mean, we're one of the worst hail states in the union. The wildfires are becoming, you know, hugely problematic in areas of our state. So homeowners insurance itself, probably needs more consumer engagement, because the problem I think we all have with consumers when it comes to homeowners insurance, and we saw this with some of the fires, is, you know, when we shop homeowners insurance, we look to see what's cheapest very often. That's a good insurance company and the rates are lowest, I'm going to go there. Not actually getting into the weeds of your own policy to say, is this enough coverage for me to rebuild my house if it burns to the ground, like what happened to our neighbors up north here? And it turns out for so many, the cheapest policy wasn't nearly enough to do that. So I think there's a tremendous amount of consumer education that needs to happen, maybe more so than more legislation, which has proven to, in my opinion at least, to be quite ineffective at that.
Okay, we've got a couple minutes left. So I guess just quickly, I want to ask Senator Mullica, you know, next year, if there's one bill that you could pass, what would it be?
You know, I guess I'm going to go back to the workforce safety. I this interim, I really want to focus on coming up with that policy and what can we do to truly protect our healthcare workers and to make sure that we're doing all that we can to keep them in the workforce. I think that's going to be a big thing that I spent a lot of my summer doing, and it's a difficult needle to thread, and it's going to be some difficult conversations. But that's going to be something that I'm going to really focus on, because I think it's needed, and I think that it's one of those things where you can see on the horizon what's potentially happening and trying to stop from getting to that point. And so that'll be something I really focus on.
All right, I'll give you a choice of questions. You can answer both or either or. One bill that was passed in the past 8 years that you would undo, or what was your favorite thing that you ever accomplished in the legislature?
I would say favorite bill. So part of this is, I think, what makes me sometimes unpopular in my party is I like to go after the big social issues with a different little twist on it to try to find bipartisan ways of fixing things. So when it comes to things like violence across our state, you know, and my colleagues on the left are like, we need to ban all the guns. And the people on the right say, no, we need to have more guns. Right? What I like to do is come in between to say, you know, the common thread seems to be mental health in a lot of cases. So, you know, what can we do there? What can we do as far as additional mental health beds? What can we do here? So but between that and I would say on the abortion front, the most fun I had was, you know, again, the left is, we need to have legal abortions up to the day of delivery. The right says life begins at the moment you fall in love. All right, so we've got this wide chasm here between the left and the right, and where we were able to get a lot of good bipartisan work done is on, okay, once you have a newborn baby, and I think we all agree once a baby's actually out and in diapers that we can have this conversation about what do we do for those babies who, at least in my county, ended up far too frequently killed by their mothers who didn't want to have children and didn't realize it till later, didn't have the understanding of what to do. So we were able to do three different bills on safe haven for newborns, expanding that. And for me, what that did was at least prove that there is middle ground on these big social issues. It might not make everybody happy, or it might make everybody very unhappy. But if you spend enough time with it and have enough conversations with people on both sides, you can find areas where you agree. And so between those two issues, I'll look back and go, there's promise in this country. We're not as divided as we think we are. So appreciate the question on that, because very few people, I think, would have even paid attention to some of those little bills.
Yeah, that is interesting. It was a big change in state law. Well, thank you both so much. I really appreciate it, senators.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Ranchers are demanding more action from Colorado Parks and Wildlife after a seventh calf was found dead after an apparent wolf attack in Colorado. The Middle Park Stock Growers Association sent another letter this month calling on CPW to kill two wolves the group blames for the killing of a calf on a Grand County ranch May 11th. The wolves were introduced to Colorado from Oregon and were confirmed by CPW to have killed seven calves or yearlings in Grand County since April. The association says the continuing attacks show that non-lethal means, including a new range rider program, aren't working. Lieutenant Governor Diane Primavera was released from a hospital Sunday, where she had been admitted late Wednesday for treatment of an infection in her arm. Primavera said in a statement that she had different plans in mind for Memorial Day weekend, but that she's grateful for the doctors, nurses, and staff who provided her with care. Primavera has survived multiple bouts of cancer. A lightning strike killed a Jackson County rancher and more than 30 of his cattle on Sunday as the man tossed hay from the back of a trailer. 51-year-old Mike Morgan was feeding his herd as the strike hit, killing him and knocking the 100 or so cows and calves standing around the trailer off their feet. Morgan was on the board of the North Park Stock Growers Association and had spoken up for ranchers regarding the reintroduction of wolves, which have killed multiple cows since being set loose in December. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hi, I'm Tamara Chung, and I write about business and technology for the Colorado Sun. A large part of my beat is the Colorado economy and covering the ups and downs of losing a job, finding a job, running a business, all that fun stuff. You'll find coverage every Saturday in What's Working, and it's free because we feel all Coloradans need to know this stuff in order to stay better informed. You know, that's how we roll here, by the way. And that's why we appreciate your support to help keep the Colorado Sun sustainable. If you'd like to become a member, you can just go to coloradosun.com/join today. Thanks.